Money, consumption, status, and power have long driven our culture's pulse. They've shaped our motivations, our behaviors, and our beliefs. But what happens when we give art the same influence? Writers, designers, musicians, photographers, videographers, and the world's most creative minds have the power to heal us, challenge us, and guide us back home to ourselves. In their hands and through their crafts, we find a new world, one where art is a catalyst for powerful change, where self-expression, human connection, and deep empathy are the world's richest assets. This is Art is the New Wall Street with your host, Morgan Short.
Welcome back to Art is the New Wall Street. Today, I am welcoming Leanna Werzer. She's an oil painter, muralist, illustrator, and professional street artist who has worked with the Minnesota Lynx, Minnesota's largest candy store, Veterans Defense Project. Oh, and she just won Best Painter and Artist in the Twin Cities Collective's Best of Awards. So she brings all sorts of art forms to life, and you'll really love her. Her work, her as a person. She does nerd candy and wildly inappropriate greeting cards, which we'll explore later in the episode. But today we're going to chat all about Leanna's artistic evolution and her journey. Leanna, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so excited.
And where are you right now, Leanna?
I am sitting on the floor in the break room of a wonderful place called Canvas Convergence. It's actually a 3D immersive arts gallery located in St. Louis Park in the West End. I'm a big part of this gallery where we create the 3D wall and floor murals where you can, it's immersive because you can be a part of the photo. So you get to jump on in and look like you're being hoisted in the air by a Yeti, or you can, we're working on right now that we're creating a dinosaur scene where you can sit in a nest and be hatched by Mama Velociraptor, or you can roast not marshmallows. You're sitting there roasting gingerbread men with some very happy marshmallows. It's just a very creative place and it's so much fun. We offer classes and we also have a full gift shop of all local artisans. So it's really a fun place to stop by and take your kids and your grandma.
I have been to come over there and check it out. Is it open to the public?
Yes, we are open from Wednesday through Sunday, normally 12 to 8 p.m. Let's see, Wednesday through Saturday, and then on Sunday, 12 to 5. We just extended our stay here, and so we should be here until the end of 2024. So it's very exciting. We originally were just a pop-up gallery for the winter season, so a lot of people really are excited about what we've got going on here. It's basically taking the excitement of a chalk festival and bringing it indoors so it doesn't wash away immediately after the rain, so it's a lot of fun.
And you're part of chalk festivals as well. Tell me what happens there.
So I started doing that in 2021. I'm actually part of the Delano Area Council for Arts. And we host a little 4th of July event with the Delano Library. And so they have it's just a mini chalk art event. That's what it started out as. But then they hired Sean McCann. He's a local professional street artist, and they hired him to do a little demonstration a few years ago. The other ladies on the council were like, Leanna, I know you're an artist. You need to get out there and fill more spaces. Fill another space for us because we don't have enough people signed up. And so I did it. I had never done chalk art before, but I had seen Sean's work over the years on social media because we had somehow been friends on Facebook for a while and I had never met him. So I went down there and I gave it a whirl and he's like, you need to come up to Wahpeton next weekend. And so that was the next professional chalk art, I guess, excursion up in Wahpeton, North Dakota, which is one of the 12 chalk festivals around the United States that he actually coordinates and puts on. So he put me on the schedule up there and it was so much fun. And I made so many friends and now it's just part of life now. So it's like you just get out there and it is such a painful, dirty job. You're on your knees. And you're coloring and you're rubbing off your fingerprints for 2 days and it becomes an obsession because you're in front of people and you want that wow factor. And the only way to get it is to be obsessive about your work. At least that's how I am. I don't stop until it's probably most of the time beyond the completion time, but it's like, you just have to keep going and going and going. So that has actually been the thing that got me okay with creating my work in front of people. I've always been a kind of a introvert and I don't really have an easy time, or I had not before, talking to people about my work as I create it. And so it really, really helped pull me out of my comfort zone. And that is probably the only reason I am comfortable doing this with you today.
Well, I thank the chalk festivals and Sean then, because we would not have you if you weren't willing to create in front of people and share your story. Was art always your calling, or did you explore other career paths before you were fully committed to it? Let's hear more of your story.
So it's kind of a rocky start. Loved art in high school and middle school. I even have a photo of myself in my fourth grade yearbook, and it said, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And I said, "An artist." And I love to draw. I loved winning little contests at school for the best person to create this for a contest, whatever. And I don't know. It was fun and it was easy for me. I was never the mathematician. I'm the middle child and the only creative. My older brother and my youngest sister were both geniuses. And here I am. I couldn't do anything but draw. And I always felt it was a downfall until I was able to create something amazing out of it. And I've never recognized it until very recently as amazing. So that's another thing that chalk festivals have given to me is confidence. Mm-hmm. Because as people are able to watch me in my process and watch something evolve from nothing to something like really freaking cool in the middle of a road, and then get just amazing feedback, has boosted my confidence. And I can't thank him enough. But anyway, I just diverted from your question. So it was really the only thing that I felt that I could do. But at the end of high school, I was advised by the school counselor and maybe one or two people that art really isn't a sustainable career. It'll be very difficult for me to be able to do what I actually want as an artist. And at the time, I was just so naive and I had no really strong drive of my own to be like, oh yeah, we'll watch this. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to do it. And so I followed what other people said because I didn't know. And so just because I worked at a place where law enforcement would stop by every once in a while and chat and tell stories, and I had a friend going into it, I ended up going into law enforcement.
Okay.
So I went up to a tech school to complete my 2-year degree, and I had a lot of fun doing it. It was all hands-on, and a lot of it was hands-on, and I crave that. I mean, that's how I learn. And so after that, I still wasn't comfortable with the law enforcement thing. I mean, so I went and finished my 4-year degree in the cities. And then after that, my anxiety, I ended up going to so many interviews, and it was my anxiety that just kind of caught me up every single time. And I was just, I always thought that I was just a horrible interviewer, where I think really I just would have been a horrible cop.
Right.
So just being honest.
What did you get your degree in?
Law enforcement.
Law enforcement. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't have an art degree. I've never even taken an art course beyond high school. And everything that I've learned has just been through researching on YouTube for some things that I couldn't figure out. Trial and error, talking to peers, meeting people who know what they're doing, and just consistent tenacity. So I didn't even start really tackling or taking on being an artist until I think it was about 2014 or so. I mean, I had been painting pet portraits and just doing random things for people every once in a while since high school, but never anything that I could call myself an artist for. And that was another thing. Even when I started doing this professionally, I felt uncomfortable calling myself an artist.
Wow.
Because it was a massive imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had it in my brain that only somebody who has been formally educated with what they know how to do can call themselves that in a career. And I was so down on myself because I wanted it so bad. I wanted a passion that I could just run with and enjoy what I do in life. And I felt like I would never get there unless I had school. But then the wisdom from a seasoned, untraditionally trained person told me was like, you are as good or better as any of the people who have gone through school without the $100,000 tuition fee. They're like, just keep in mind. So it still was a while after that until I realized that I guess I am, and I could call myself that, but it did take a while. But once I decided that I was going to do art, whether I got paid for it or not, it was sort of like unlocking a code.
Ooh, and yes.
And that let the creativity and passion flow. And I think that's when I called myself an artist. Because whether or not I was going to be paid for it, whether I was going to go get a different job, it didn't matter. I was going to do it. And things, it was like, until I realized that, I was blocked from a lot.
Yes.
But,
and was there a specific time that you stopped the law enforcement and you were like, I'm going to do art instead?
No. So it was all just very, I don't know, the timeline is kind of weird. So after law enforcement school, I went into security and surveillance for a few years.
Okay.
It was the most boring. I mean, I'm sorry for anybody who is in those positions, but for me, I it wasn't for me. And I ended up marrying a police officer from school, from my friend group. And I worked for a few years in the marriage, but then I started having kids. I ended up quitting that job as he progressed in his, and that allowed us to just be a one income household. And I stayed at home for about 10 years with my three kids until things went sour and the marriage crumbled. But it was that unfortunate turn of events that really forced me to realize that I needed something more than just being a mom. And I don't mean just being a mom, but I needed to fulfill myself. I needed to feel like I was worth something more than just being a mom. Like, what is my actual purpose?
Mm-hmm.
And so I sat down and I prayed for a passion. And that's where, like, why didn't I just continue with the art? Why wasn't this a thing that I've done all along consistently? I don't know. But then I started to, because it gave me an outlet to not think about the bad things and to direct all of the emotions and frustrations either into the painting or allow me to escape from all of that for a little bit while I concentrate on the painting. So that's really what kickstarted me into not stopping. And then with all of the practice that came with that, I went from pet portraits to landscapes to people portraits, which had freaked me out before. It became such a passion, and the drive that came with that made me want to constantly learn. And all I wanted to do was try everything there was, not just different mediums, but try all of the styles. And I can't even tell you all of the different types of techniques that there are out there. I don't know what they're called. I mean, sure, I've looked a few of them up before, but and that was another part of my imposter syndrome. When people say, can you paint something in this style? It's like, what? What does that mean? That I go look it up. But it's like the drive to learn, it became fierce. And the more that I tried out, like I couldn't just pick my favorite type of thing that I wanted to do, because it started to become so easy. Or not like it was really hard before, but since I already knew certain ways how to do things, certain aspects of skill, like it just started snowballing and being able to create things faster helped me being able to put more out there. And I don't know, it was all part of it, but it's just hard to consolidate into one easy answer. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh. No, I love that you shared all of that story. And I want to bring up a few parts of what you shared that I think our listeners are really going to relate to. But I just want to celebrate you, Leanna, for stepping into your artist shoes and calling yourself an artist. And, you know, doing things and learning things that you've never done before. It's a scary thing, and it's amazing to hear people that are out there doing it. You talked about how people gave you feedback that helped you figure out that you should probably follow this artist path. You talked about early on the practicality of being an artist, and is that really a practical path, right? And you talked about imposter syndrome. And you talked about doing new forms of art that you've never done before and also being self-taught. And I think the definition, how we determine whether we call ourselves an artist or not, is really an interesting and nuanced question as well. So there's like five things there that I want to ask you about. And I'm going to start with the practicality piece. So what do you wish somebody would have told you when you were young about being an artist? You had this idea in your head that it was impractical. What would you tell young Leanna now?
Oh my goodness. I'm out there chalking and somebody walks by with their kid and they tell me how good of an artist they are. And people are excited to show me what they've done. And they're like, do you have any advice? And the very first thing that comes to mind every time is don't stop. No matter what anybody tells you, if that's what excites you, that and that's your passion, don't stop. I mean, it frustrates me. My life path would have been completely different if I would have followed that. But also, I'm so grateful for the things that I learned along the way. I know that that was, I guess, what was supposed to happen to teach me certain things. But even if I had to learn those lessons, I wish I wouldn't have taken so many breaks in between. Because I could have progressed myself, even if I didn't go to school for art, as it happened. But if I continued to paint throughout those law enforcement years and everything, I could have progressed myself farther than I am now, but I don't know. I just, the biggest thing is I wish I wouldn't have stopped. I wish I would have listened to my gut, because my fourth grader self knew what I was supposed to be. Isn't it wild how when we're little, we know we have so much curiosity and we haven't been crushed by society yet. It's just so interesting to look back. And in my 20s, it was like, you have to be a certain way. You have to go get the best job. You have to go to school. Like, here are the rules and don't break them. And now I've entered this new decade of my life and a new season of life where I'm like, you know what? Actually, time to do some unlearning, some healing, and time to follow that childlike curiosity and desire to do what I really, really feel called to do.
Another thing that I've been told from a wise person is the only way to guarantee failure is to quit right now.
Say that again.
The only way to guarantee failure is to quit right now.
Yes.
You're not going to fail even if you don't getting paid what you want to get paid, you're still doing absolutely what you love to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes you happy. And that's not a failure in my book.
And the scary part, the finances that you just brought up, getting paid. Yeah. What's your relationship like with finances and art?
So far, the more I believe I can do it, the better things have come to me. And when I first started this, I never assumed that I would be able to support myself by doing the things that I loved. And I am at that point. Of course, it would be nice to be able to make what the famous artists make. Mm-hmm. But it's like, right now, I am happy. And the more I put into it, the more uncomfortable I allow myself to get, and the more barriers I break have been kind of the key to more successes. What? So this past year, I had never done digital artwork before, but Yasna Borsa asked me if I knew how to illustrate. And I mean, I had never really done that before, but I took it on as a challenge of sorts. And I downloaded a digital program on my iPad and I started working with her to find out what she liked. And there were times when I had no idea what I was doing. I mean, that was a lot of the time, actually. But just pushing through, being uncomfortable and forcing myself to keep going is what brought that success. And she loved what it ended up being. And so like with the finances, it's like, I feel like I'm going to get to the spot where I would like to be if just continue to learn. Because growing and pushing the uncomfortable levels is the only way that I'm going to even have a chance at that.
You know, I think a lot of artists, this comes up a lot for artists, right? Do I have to do something else in addition to my art to, you know, survive, to have financial freedom or even just to make it, you know? So I just think it's always interesting to hear.
There certainly have been times where I have thought that. Then I'll start getting into, the mural business. I mean, and it would be like, oh, wait a minute, I can do this too. This counts as being an artist, like working for the Minnesota's largest candy store under Sean McCann. Again, he's the one who has brought me into all of these really cool experiences. Like things like that where I wouldn't have considered before has helped me dive into another avenue of income. And then, I don't know, like this place here, it's a place to sell. Sell the things that have been sitting at home for years that I had created for little shows, and they've done better here than they've done any other place so far, and it's just very exciting. And because of this, it's opening up pathways in my brain, making me think of where else can I put this? And so I'll hopefully be hitting up local stores around here for things like the inappropriate cards that I came up with.
Yes. Tell the audience about your wildly inappropriate card series.
The idea for them came up a few years ago just by staring at an image of something that I painted for my sister when she had her first baby. I created a little woodland series of baby animals. They're super cute. And then, so it was the deer card that struck me. It's just a little baby deer. And I thought, wouldn't it be so funny to make a greeting card out of this? But not just any greeting card, just make it completely unassuming, because it's the sweetest photo on the front, or not photo, it's a print of a painting. It's so sweet. But then the inside of it, I don't know if I can swear on your...
We welcome swear words on Artists on Wall Street.
The inside of it says, "Dear motherfucker." But it's way better than just that, because the deer is spelled out like D-E-E-R. So it's a pun and everything. So it's just goofy humor. And it's the unassuming part of this collection of cards that I think makes it, because people look at it and they're like, "Oh, that's so sweet." And then they open it up and it's a completely salty.
I was reading some of them. Audience, I'm just going to read a couple out for you. One of them, some of your recent ones on your Instagram, Leanna, "Bless your heart, idiot." There was one, I think, for a new mom, "Sniffing ass will be your new normal."
Yeah.
And then I don't know what the celebration was for this one, but "If you got stung by a jellyfish, I would totally pee on you."
Yeah. Yeah, that's a reference from Friends.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, it's fun. There's a lot of humor that is kind of a vein throughout all of my work, or a lot of my work at least. And and the humor is sort of a branch of the main, I guess, vein that runs through it, which is light. Everything that I do has a common element, which is a version of light. And in it, kind of, it just symbolizes how art and really immersing myself into it helped pull me out of the darkness. Because I was going through such a hard time in my life when I really decided that I needed to focus on it. It was a divorce with three kids, and the art had my brain in better places. Mm-hmm. So all of my work is an element of light, whether it's reflection or glow or humor. It's not only a symbol, but it's also really fun to work with, because when something I have found has a heavy contrast, the light against dark, humor against otherwise serious painting, as in the Nerd Candy series, the contrast gives off like a wow factor, because it takes people by surprise a little bit. And these chalk arts, that when I can make something appear that it's glowing in the middle of the street, it makes people walk by and they're like, "Holy crap, like, that's amazing." And that is such a good feeling. And that's like everything that I aim for when I create. It's not just for me. It's to get these reactions out of people. And oftentimes I tell people, and jokingly, that one of my favorite things about what I do is to make people cry. I mean, I say it jokingly, but it really is true when they're happy tears, when they're emotional tears because of something that pulls at their heartstrings, whether it's a memorial portrait or something, an image that means something to them, or they laugh so hard that they cry and piss their pants. That's what I strive for, because that's what this has done for me. It's pulled me out of my shell, and it has kind of brought me into visibility of my true self, I think.
Isn't that beautiful? And even the way you describe your own style and how light is a core theme in the work that you do is art in itself. Like the way that you describe that and the way that you show up as yourself through your art is pretty cool. What would you say to an artist that is struggling to find their own style or their own voice through their art?
That's a good question. Maybe what makes you go, wow? I mean, for me, it's light, but for somebody else, I mean, it could be anything. What takes your words away?
Yeah. What moves you?
Right. And often when people ask me, what would I tell somebody if I wanted to give them advice about art? And I tell them, well, for me, I'm always looking for a humorous angle. So I tell them, well, one of the things I'm looking for is a humorous angle. So I say to people, if I'm going that route, I say, what is the weirdest thing that you could put right there to make somebody go, what? Like, just a conversation piece.
Yeah. So take me through. So you're starting a piece. What's going on in your head? Do you have an outcome? Do you have a vision in mind? Do you just start? Do you meditate beforehand?
When I start something, each blank canvas, I think, has to come with a need to fulfill first. Like, there is a purpose that I'm doing it, whether it's somebody either hires it for me or I'm looking for something to paint for somebody, or it's part gallery. Everything starts with a need. So that comes first. But I mean, after that purpose, that's when you have that locked in, that's when kind of helps it flow. I don't know. You have to have a need, and then you have to have, and then once that's locked in, the vision starts, and then I just kind of work with it. Mm-hmm. What would look good here? What would make this part pop? It just, there's not really a methodical way I go about things. It just, if it looks right or if it doesn't, right. A lot of times it doesn't look right and I get so mad. But that's when the only way to fail is to quit. So
the only way to fail is to quit. So maybe there's not a process right as you're sitting down to create this art. But as artists and as creatives, I think a lot of our practice happens outside of the actual work itself and in the routines and the daily activities that we've got going on. So what is your typical routine each day in the morning? What do you do as a living and working creative artist?
So I used to stay up super late. When my kids were little, I used to stay up super late and paint until way late, early morning. And that wore me down so fast. And as I got older, I just could not do that. So now, I mean, I fall asleep when my kids fall asleep. So it's 8:30, 9 o'clock, but then I wake up at 5. I don't start painting immediately. As I've grown and as I've learned from people who seem to know what they're doing, it has become a meditation routine and journaling, not as often as I would like to, but it's like it's so hard right now. My kids are still young. I have one in elementary, one in middle school, one in high school. So the mornings can be pretty busy anyway once they're up. And so I usually try to have about an hour of my own time just to get my head in the right space. But beyond that, it's like whatever is tugging at my priority list. It's my being a creative. I don't know. My brain just is not focused. And that is really a time killer sometimes because I struggle with that so much. I hate to admit it sometimes because I like to feel
that I appear that I'm on the ball, but really I just go with
flow is a huge part of the creative process too.
It is. I mean, there's so much procrastination because my mind is going in so many different directions with all the things that I have had, like my sticks in the fire and all these different fires. And I want to do so many different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, so many times I need to remind myself that I just need to hold back because I would love to do all the things, but that's not reality in my life right now. And so right now it's just one thing at a time.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something I want to revisit that has come up a couple times in our conversation so far. And that is, what makes someone an artist? What is a real artist? You've mentioned to yourself, that's when I considered myself a real artist, is when I was going to do it, no matter if I got paid or not. So
yeah.
Is this something that you would apply across the board, or what do you think makes a real artist?
I guess whether you consider yourself one or not, just continue to create. I mean, I suppose you can probably call yourself an artist if you're just sitting there thinking about what you're going to do. Because I've seen all kinds of crazy things where people call them all different sorts of artists. I mean, I think it all is in your mindset. I mean, I could have called myself an artist back when I was in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that is one thing that I think mindset is so huge.
Absolutely. And absolutely. I mean, I think being a human is an act of art in and of itself, making decisions in the morning, writing your to-do list, how you adorn yourself and dress yourself, I mean, there's so many different kinds of arts, and I think it should be celebrated. And that's why I started this podcast. Okay. And the other thing I wanted to follow up on is rejection, criticism, applause, feedback. How do you take the feedback, and what do you choose to lean into and leave behind, and who do you trust? That's a huge part of the creative journey, of any creative journey.
It is. Throughout the years, I have been absolutely my worst critic, as most artists are. I have pushed away so much positive feedback before I started to really feel into myself that this is me. The only really negative feedback that I have had, surprisingly, has been family related. And that's only because they don't approve of inappropriateness.
Mm-hmm. Well, and going back to the practicality part of it too, right? Like,
so many people from the older generations just don't, there's so much that they're blocked to just because of how they grew up. And this last time, it really stung, coming from somebody who I love.
Mm.
And it was specifically over some of the inappropriate cards where those people I wasn't intending on showing, but they ended up seeing them anyway, and they had some nasty words. It hurt at first, yes, but after I thought about it and after it sank in about the differences in generations and that generation and this specific person is not all over the internet. They kind of are not aware of how the world of today is.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have what you want, right? Like, you want to express yourself creatively through your work. And
exactly.
Well, can you tell the audience about the Nerd Candy? Because I don't think we've introduced that one yet.
Yeah. So the Nerd Candy started out
this was almost towards the beginning of the real art venture that I'm on. I thought it would be so funny to mash up just worlds that do not look like they belong together. And I also thought, I mean, I think that the female form is really pretty to paint. And so I ended up taking pinups from 40s and 50s era and replacing some of the things on them with pop art, like a Stormtrooper helmet or Hello Kitty or let's see, Transformers, Muppets. Gosh, there's like, it just gets really wild because some of them have been requested by other weirdos. Like, I think it's so funny to watch and to listen to what people want. And it's just, it's so much fun. And so that really snowballed to kind of another little niche that I kind of coined the hashtag, it's where nerd candy is, where fine art meets fan art. Because I take the techniques of a classic oil painting and combine them with fan art from that you would normally see at a Comic-Con or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then combine it with pinups, which every nerdy guy is going to like. Mm-hmm. I figured this as a selling point. And so I ended up doing a bunch of these and then bringing them to a Minneapolis Comic-Con type. It was a GalaxyCon and it did awesome. And it was so fun seeing all these people stop by and they're just like, their jaw would drop and little kids would be like, Mom, look what they did to Iron Man. I think it was just so funny. But the fact that the comments that I received and the feedback, people was like, we have never seen this type of artwork here before. There's a lot of digital stuff there. There's a lot of just drawings and comics and whatever, but not a lot of people are putting the time into making it a giant 30 by 40 oil painting, but that's what I love to do. So it was really, really cool. So, I made that into the 2020 calendar. And I am working towards enough images for a second calendar, but I still have a few left. But
and can you go per? Oh well, the 2020 is over, but
I do a few extra if you would like. When you
know, totally. Yes, I wanted to follow up on one more thing from your story, which tons of creatives and artists resonate with: imposter syndrome.
Oh yes.
How do we break through imposter syndrome, Leanna?
That's a tough one. I don't know. Continue to do it. Continue. And I think what really, really helps that is feedback from people in the public who don't consider themselves an artist. Because it's been those people who give me all of the confidence, who have given me the confidence. And I don't know. And not just that, but when I talk to other artists, when people who are so good and I just idolize and I watch what they can do and I'm like, wow, I could never do that. But then I try to do what they do and I can totally do that. And then they give me feedback like, I don't believe you that you think this low of yourself. And I'm like, yeah, I guess maybe I shouldn't. But
yeah, she's a wonderful artist. So
thank you.
But I think we all have it.
Yes.
I mean, I published a poetry book and I still don't consider myself a poet. I'm like, no.
You should have your book in this gallery. We sell books.
I have them. My mic right now is actually on top of a stack of my books.
Really? You should totally bring them in.
I could. But it's it's interesting. And I think it goes back to what you were describing as how you define who makes a real artist. If you say you're an artist, you're a real artist, right?
Yeah.
If we don't reach externally for the validation and the feedback, it's like internally, turn off the noise. Yes. Nothing else matters except me stepping in and doing what I feel called to authentically do. Deep inside, I am an artist. And to heck with the imposter syndrome.
Exactly.
Comparison is the thief of joy.
Just get over yourself and just do it. Just call yourself it and it'll sink in eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Start feeling like it's normal.
Oh, man. We've covered a lot. We're coming up on the end of our time together, Leanna, but we talked about the practicality of art, taking feedback, what makes a real artist, your own style. Do you have any work or upcoming projects you want to give a shout out to?
Well, the only thing really that I've got going on right now is this gallery. We're called Canvas Convergence, and we are a 3D immersive arts gallery located in the West End district of St. Louis Park. We take the anamorphic images that you might see at a chalk festival where you take photos standing on the piece, and then through your camera lens, it actually looks like it's 3D, like you're actually in it. So we took that concept and we brought it indoors, and it has been so much fun. And we will be here until the end of the year. And
until the end of 2024.
Yes. And actually, we are working on getting a chalk festival right here this summer as well. Yeah. So we've got that one as well as downtown Minneapolis and Maple Grove as far as the city ones. And then they're dispersed throughout beyond that. But
the hours of Canvas Convergence, one more time for the audience.
We're open Wednesday through Sunday, 12 to 8 Wednesday through Saturday, and 12 to 5 on Sunday.
And can you just come in, or does it cost money? Or
No, we are free. We wanted to be able to include everybody. That's actually one of the themes that this place stands for. I guess we decided on the name Canvas Convergence because we converge together. One of the taglines of this place is forging soul through art. We want it to be all inclusive for those who would not be able to afford going to a museum of sorts like this. But it is free will offering. You can donate if you like to the cause to keep this place running, get more pieces in here. And let's see, we do have classes. They are listed on our website, canvasconvergence.com. I could check on that and I'll let you know. But we offer a huge variety of classes from movie makeup to stained glass to upcycled thrift store paintings. There's mindfulness workshops. Let's see, there's Monday margaritas and mandalas.
Love it.
Oh my goodness. There's so much fun stuff going to be on the books here. We're going to start a concert series. So we're going to be bringing in musical artists, and you can find it all on the website.
Yeah, I am absolutely going to make some time to come over there. I can't believe I haven't been over there yet. I need to get over there. It sounds like such a cool place. And last question for you is, where can listeners find you, Leanna Werzer? You have a website, Instagram?
Yeah, my website is www.lkwerzerfineart.com. And then my social handles are at Leanna Kart. So kind of like Mario Kart, but it's LANNAKART.
You know, I actually thought your last name was Kart at first.
And then I realized, but it's just K-Art. But
I got it.
I like kind of Mario Kart.
Yeah. All right. So, well, Leanna, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your heart and your art with us. It's been so wonderful hearing your story and chatting about the evolution of your artistry. It's such a pleasure to know you and to have met you and to learn more about you. And to all of our listeners out there, huge thanks for tuning in. Keep creating, keep making magic. Your art is a gift to you and to the world.
Thank you so much. You are amazing. I'm so happy that we connected.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Art is the New Wall Street. If you liked what you heard today, give our show a follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can find us on social media or at artisthenewwallstreet.com. Keep creating, and we'll see you next time.